कथं वा पन्दवेयस्या राजर्षेर्मुनिना सह संवद सम्भुक्तता यत्रैषा सत्पती श्रुति कथं हाउ इज इट वा ऑल्सो पांडवेयस्य ऑफ द डिसेंडेंट ऑफ पांडु परीक्षित राजर्षे ऑफ द किंग हु वाज अ सेज मुनिना विथ द मुनि सह विथ संवाद discussion samabhut took place tata O darling yatra whereupon esha like this satvati transcendental shruti essence of the Vedas. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. How did it so happen that King Parikshit met this great sage, making it possible for this great transcendental essence of the Vedas, the Bhagavatam, to be sung to him? Srila Prabhupada's purport. Srimad Bhagavatam is stated here as the essence of the Vedas. It is not an imaginary story, as is sometimes considered by unauthorized men. It is also called Shuka Samhita, or the Vedic hymn spoken by Sri Shukadeva Goswami, the great liberated sage. So, Prabhupada in this purport is referring to practice in India, where they think that these histories of the Vedas are imaginary, that they are mythology, or as they say in India, mythology. But correct pronunciation, at least the pronunciation I was taught was mythology. So these are not myths, but they're actually histories. There was one time in a class, Prabhupada was speaking from the Bhagavatam, and there was something quite unusual for us, something adbhut, amazing, that was spoken like of in the Bhagavatam. And if those of us who study the Bhagavatam, we know that there are certain things there that appear quite amazing to us. So one of my godbrothers, Madhudvisa, raised his hand and said, Srila Prabhupada, we've never seen things like this, or even heard things like this. He was thinking it was a little too fantastic. This was Prabhupada's reply. What you have seen, you are barely out of the womb. So, we have the mentality of the frog in the well. What we see, what we understand, we consider to be everything. So Prabhupada told this story of Dr. Frog. He was a brilliant PhD. He was the topmost frog in the well. He knew everything. He had calculated everything about the water and about the sides of the well and everything. And then one day a frog jumped in from a big lake. And Dr. Frog said, oh, who are you? Where do you come from? Oh, I come from this huge lake. Well, how big is your lake? Oh, it's vast. What is it, as big as this well? Oh, much bigger. What, two times? Much bigger. Three times, four times, 10 times? And he was puffing himself up more, as frogs do, till he burst. Because he couldn't understand anything beyond his own well. So he related the lake according to his own understanding of the well. And that's what human beings tend to do. our understanding of what we see in three-dimensional time and space, we project that on to the rest of existence and think that we've understood. And when we read in the Bhagavatam some things that appear amazing and like out of this world, very difficult to relate to it because it has nothing to do with our experience. So how do we accept it? If you just, for instance, if you were to go into the library and pick up Srimad Bhagavatam and read some of the things there, you would come to the conclusion that this is mythology. You could logically come to that conclusion. Right? Like Vishnu riding on Garuda, for example. Well, or some of the other things, in the, you know, Priyavrata driving the chariot of the sun, you know, and creating the seven dweeps of Jambudweep. So it's some phantasmagoria, mythology, we think. And so Madhavisa said, but we've not seen anything like this. We never heard anything like this. Brahma said, what you have seen, you're barely out of the womb. So this is the point. We're like the frog in the well. Now I'm presently writing a science book, and I've done a lot of research. I'm writing two books. My first book is on creation, and the second book's on evolution. So on creation, we have two stories. We have the traditional story. The traditional story is in every culture that some supernatural being, either known as God or some other supernatural being, created everything. This is the traditional story. The modern story is that the universe and all its laws and everything that we see was created spontaneously out of nothing. Poof, it just happens. So, recently I came across a letter that Srila Prabhupada had written to Bhakti Swarup Damodar, who later became Bhakti Swarup Damodar Goswami and one of the foremost spiritual masters in our movement, although he has left his body. And in that letter, he had written to Rameshwar, who was head of the BBT, and to Bhakti Swarup Damodar. So he wrote to Rameshwar with a copy to Bhakti Swarup Damodar, but it was concerning Bhakti Swarup Damodar. So he wrote, my dear Rameshwar, the service that Bhakti Swarup is doing, well, Swarup Damodar, he got the name Bhakti Swarup, but he took sannyas, so his name was Swarup Damodar at that time, is the most important service, preaching to the scientists to destroy their atheistic conception. Therefore, we can stop all other programs and focus on this. We do not need to continue the Sanskrit department. He was ready to give up the Sanskrit department. We don't require any more Sanskritists. We can give up the art department. We don't require any more pictures. So whatever expenses went for the Sanskrit department and for the art department, Prabhupada was willing to stop that. And you give all funding to Bhakti Swarup Damodar and his science preaching. I am prepared to spend at least $10,000 a month or more for this program. Now, $10,000 a month in 1975, it's probably worth 10 times the amount today. So when I read that letter, I never saw that letter before, just back in April or March of this year. I was like, oh my gosh, Prabhupada is so into this. And, you know, we really haven't gone out and preached to the scientists, you know, our conception and find the holes in their conception to bring them to a more spiritual understanding. He was willing to give up the Sanskrit department and willing to give up the art department for this preaching. So this Bhagavatam, the teachings of the Bhagavatam, is not mythology, it's not imaginary. It is the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. It's the highest understanding. Another time I remember Prabhupada instructed us. I remember this. He said, we do not use our intelligence to try and bring the understanding of Bhagavatam down to the level of our intelligence so that we can understand it. No. We bring our intelligence up to the platform of Bhagavatam to try to understand it. But most people do it the other way around. They use their present intelligence and try to understand the Bhagavatam. We raise our intelligence. How do we do that? Anandam buddhi vardhanam. We increase our intelligence and our devotion. How? By what? Param vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. By the supreme conqueror of illusion, Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. So we raise our level of consciousness. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. Those devotees, or any persons, who are constantly engaged in worshipping Krishna with love, priti, purvakam. Purvakam means full. Full means 100%, not 50%, not 1%, but priti purvakam, full love. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. I give that intelligence, buddhi, of pure yoga, of bhakti yoga, so that we can understand these things. Yena maam upayanti te, so that you can return back home to me, back to home, back to Godhead. So Prabhupada has given us the process to understand that this is reality. However, we may disagree with modern scientific understanding. So what happened was like this. So I was in India and I read this letter. And of course we already had our tickets purchased to go to Europe to preach this summer. So we flew into France first and did programs for 2 weeks. And then we flew to Japan, did programs 2 weeks. Then at the end of April, we had programs in London and south of the UK. So in London, they gave me a particular room. In the Brahmacharya Ashram, there's a specific room for guests. So they gave me that room. In that room, there was a little library of sorts. So I was looking at the books, and one book caught my attention. It was called The Goldilocks Enigma. Everybody know the story of Goldilocks? Who doesn't know? Okay, so I'll tell you. Goldilocks was a little girl who had blonde hair. Golden locks, Goldilocks. And she was wandering through the forest and she came upon a house. And in the house lived three bears. Baby bear, mama bear, and papa bear. Anyway, to make the story shorter, there was three bowls of porridge on the table. The bears had gone out. So the one bowl of porridge was too hot. The other bowl of porridge was too cold. But baby bear's porridge was just right. Then she went upstairs and there were three beds. She got tired after eating. So one bed was too hard, the papa bear. Mother's bear, mama bear, her bed was too soft. But baby bear, her bed was just right. So the story of Goldilocks is that everything is just right. So the book was called The Goldilocks Enigma. You know what an enigma is? A puzzle that can't be solved. An irreducible puzzle, a conundrum. So I thought, well, what's this all about? So I pulled it out, and it turns out it's a book on physics and how the universe was created. And this author was writing about how everything is so fine-tuned in this universe for life, that if this little thing was just altered a tiny percentage or that, and he went through all the different things, they were just altered, the force by 0.1%, or the distance by 1%, or this or that, then life would be impossible in this universe. So the Goldilocks enigma for physics is that how this universe is just right for life, if it just spontaneously created out of nothing. Now, it's not an enigma if God created it. So for us, well, it's just right because it was created for life. But in physics, they don't accept a supernatural being called God who created the universe just right for life. It happens spontaneously and is governed by the laws of physics as much as they know. So I was thinking, this is amazing. I just read this letter about preaching to the scientists, and here's this book in the ashram about all these things that physicists can't understand. How is it? And I was thinking, maybe I should take up this service, as Prabhupada said in the letter, because since Bhakti Swarup Damodar left, no one's been preaching to the scientists, no one's writing books, no one's doing this service. And I was thinking, Prabhupada wanted $10,000 a month to be spent for this service. That's how much he wanted it. So I was thinking that if I write such a book and publish it, that Prabhupada would be very pleased. So I decided to take notes. So I got the book and I took notes. It led me to other books, and I started reading and finding out, and doing research and finding out all these anomalies that just don't add up. Now, for example, what is the most common occurrence in the world? It's gravity. If you hold something and let go, it falls down. It's the force of gravity. That's what they say. Turns out that scientists don't even understand the most common occurrence in the world, gravity. How it came into being, what is that force? They don't understand anything about it. Now Newton, Sir Isaac Newton, the story goes that he came up with the concept of gravity because he was sitting under a tree one day, meditating on whatever scientific thing he was thinking about, when an apple fell on his head. Anybody heard that story? Yeah. Then he realized there's some force. There is a force here. Then he thought about how everything falls. But he didn't know if that force was inherent in the earth that attracted it, or it was a force from above that was pushing it down. He wasn't sure, but he wrote about it. Anyway, since then, we've been taught in schools that science knows everything about gravity. It's what holds the Earth in orbit around the Sun. It's what holds all the stars in their orbits around the galaxies. It's what keeps everything in the universe going. But how does it do that? Now, we know from those of us who studied science, who studied Einstein, that the upper limit of speed is the speed of light. Right? Yes or no? Yeah. 302,000 kilometers per second light travels. And nothing can travel faster than that. Right? Okay. That's what they teach. Therefore, because the sun is 93 million plus miles away from the Earth, it takes at least 8.5 minutes for sunlight to reach the Earth. We don't notice the time lag because the sun's always shining. But if light is the upper bound of speed, let's consider gravity. What holds the Earth in its orbit around the sun? It's gravity, right? Now we can imagine if we had a ball with a string and we whirled that string around, the ball would go around the orbit of our hand. If all of a sudden you were to cut that string, the ball would fly off, right? So here the Earth is orbiting around the sun. What would happen if the force of gravity stopped? all of a sudden it stopped, what would happen? It would leave its orbit instantly, immediately. Now, if the force of gravity was just a little bit stronger, the Earth would circle more and more, closer and closer to the Sun, and become incinerated. If the force of gravity was just a little bit weaker, the Earth would go further and further away from the Sun and eventually go out into space, and we'd all go into a deep freeze and die. Just so happens that the force of gravity is just right to support life. It's another Goldilocks enigma. Now, if the force of gravity stops, the Earth immediately goes off. It doesn't take 8.5 minutes. That means that whatever that force is, it's faster than light. Whatever that force is that keeps everything together, it's faster than light. Now, that's just our solar system. When you consider how vast the universe is, millions of light years away, now how does gravity extend such great distances and keep things perfectly balanced? Because if it goes at the speed of light, it would take years and years to reach the end of the universe. So the force of gravity doesn't obey the laws of light. It's a different thing altogether. Now, the space probes that the Americans have been sending into orbit, like Pioneer 10, Pioneer 11, the Galileo spacecraft, and the Ulysses space probe, they noticed that once it left Earth orbit and went into space, that something very unusual happened. They slowed down. Now, there's no friction in space. They should have kept the exact same speed, or perhaps gone quicker. But they slowed down, which defied all logic and all mathematical computations of gravity. It was almost as if as it got away from the Sun, that the gravity became stronger rather than less, or even the same. So in the Discover magazine of 2003, it was the October issue, scientists said, "We have no idea about gravity, but we thought we know nothing." They're completely perplexed. And that's just gravity. Now there's one, we'll continue on this gravity thing. There appears to be more gravity in the universe that holds everything together than there is mass or matter, like stars, planets, galaxies. So physicists calculated everything that's there and then calculated the gravity needed to hold it all together, and there is 95% more gravity than is possible from all of the mass that exists. So they came to the conclusion there must be some other energy and some other mass that we can't see and that we can't detect that's holding the whole universe together. So they didn't know what to call it, so they just called it dark matter and dark energy. Dark means you can't see it, you can't detect it. We don't know what it is, but we hope in the future that we'll know. So dark matter and dark energy comprise 95% of the universe. And all we know, what's observable by our scientific instruments and the data that we have and the mathematics and the laws that we know, the laws of physics and the laws of the universe, is only 5%. That's according to NASA, the National Aeronautic and Space Administration. According to Dr. Paul Davies, who wrote this book, he said we only know 4% and 96% is unknown. But yet we're taught in schools that we know everything. Science has the complete story. It's a lie. It's a hoax. It's bogus. But we swallow it. We believe it. So Prabhupada knew that it was bogus. I didn't know that it was bogus. Prabhupada said it was bogus. Well, I accept Prabhupada, but I didn't think about it because it was beyond my understanding. But now all of a sudden, Krishna brought me into this situation where I'm seeing these books and I'm reading these books by physicists who talk amongst themselves in their own publications that we don't know anything, but to the public they present that we know it all. But amongst themselves they know that they know practically zero. It's all speculation. That was an eye-opener for me, but it really got me fired up to write this book. So this is what I've been doing. Every spare minute I get, I'm up there writing. People think, well, are you bored up there? What are you kidding? I'm like fully engaged. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is giving a different perspective, a different concept. Now I'm going to tell you something about quantum physics. In the 20th century, scientists discovered that when we look at the atoms and molecules that make up matter, the laws of the big things, Newton's laws of things like apples and planets and planes and tables and chairs, those laws don't work at the atomic level. The molecules, the atoms, the protons, neutrons, and electrons within those big things, within the tables and chairs and apples and planets, behave completely different. They have their own laws. And so a new branch of physics evolved called quantum physics. Now, they've discovered certain things about quantum physics and the laws that govern quantum physics that they can't understand. Again, it's another Goldilocks enigma. Somehow or other, everything works, but how does it work? They can't figure it out. Now, scientists have painted themselves into a corner. If you paint the floor, and you start over there, and you paint yourself until you're at this corner, but the door is over there, you can't get out. You're going to step on your paint and ruin it, right? That's called painting yourself in a corner. So scientists have painted themselves in a corner because they don't accept another nature, a spiritual nature. They don't expect, they call it a supernatural existence. They don't accept it. They don't accept a supernatural being, God. And they do not know what is consciousness. They think it's the interaction of neurons in the brain. They don't know that consciousness is a symptom of a completely different nature, which we call the spiritual nature, or in Sanskrit, the aprakrit nature, or the divya nature, which is Sat-Chit-Ananda. It's eternal, full of consciousness, full of bliss, as compared to this material nature, which is Asat, temporary, Achit, no consciousness whatsoever, insentient, and Nirananda, no bliss, no emotion, no feeling, just like this floor. So we've been given a much higher understanding. We've been given the knowledge that there is actually another nature. It's not just this nature. There's another nature. And what is the human being? It's the intersection of one nature with the other nature. It's the intersection of the material nature with the spiritual nature. The spiritual nature is the spirit spark within the material body. It's an intersection of the two planes of material energy and spiritual energy. And becoming Krishna conscious means to become aware of the spiritual dimension of ourselves. Right now we're only aware of the material. dimension of ourselves. I'm thinking I'm a male in a male body, you know, from an Indian background or Australian background or Filipino background, or I'm thinking I'm a female from a South African background or a Latin American background. But this is wrong. This is just an external vehicle by which the internal spiritual spark is conducting its activities and living out its fantasies. So Prabhupada said, who are you? Who am I? Is the first teaching. Who am I? We're suffering from a delusion. It's called an identity crisis. We don't know who we are. You mean I'm not this body? I'm not Indian? I'm not Filipino? I'm not Latina? What am I? Who am I? You're the spirit soul within. Well, how do we realize that? So Prabhupada gave us the process of bhakti yoga. We follow this process of bhakti yoga, our consciousness, our mentality, our perspective becomes purified. And then we can see beyond the external and deep to the spiritual sense, center. So that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Pandit Samadarshanaha, that the learned sage has the same vision, the same darshan as Krishna. He doesn't see the elephant, he doesn't see the dog, he doesn't see the dog eater, he doesn't see the sannyasi, he doesn't see the brahmana, he doesn't see the woman, he just sees the spirit soul in everybody. And that's what Prabhupada saw. That's not what we saw, but that's what he saw. And he dealt with us on that level. He didn't deal with you as a woman and you as a man, or you as a grihasta and you as a sannyasi. But he dealt with everybody as pure spirit soul. He instructed us like this. Atmavat manyate jagat. This is a Sanskrit aphorism that says that the way you see yourself is the way you see the universe, the way you see everything else. So if I see myself as the body, I see everything else as the body. If I have an external conception of myself, then I have an external conception of everything. Everything. But if I see myself, my conception of myself is that I'm pure spirit soul, then I see everything else in that light. And I see everyone as spiritual beings, not as bodies. What does this mean? This means that as you look out into the world, and what you see tells you what is your level of consciousness. If you're seeing bodies, then you know you're on the bodily concept of life. If you're just seeing everyone's spirit soul and you're dealing with them that way, it means you're coming to the spiritual conception. So in this way we can understand if we're making advancement or if we're staying in the same place. If you're not staying in the same place and not making advancement, then you bloop, then you leave. But if you're still here, you're either staying in the same place or you're making advancement. We all want to make advancement. How many of us are making advancement and how many of us are staying in the same place year after year, decade after decade? Well, we just have to look at what is your conception. After 40 years in the movement, what's my conception? Do I see everyone as spirit soul, or do I still treat them as the way I did before I came, as bodies? I haven't made any advancement. Am I glorifying everyone because they're Vaishnavas, or am I still finding faults with everyone like I used to do before I came? So, we're meant to become aware of our situation, whether we're making advancement or not. And I remember Prabhupada giving this instruction in a class. I was sitting there, and he said something that struck me, because I'd never heard it before. He said, "Don't be Krishna unconscious. First become conscious. Then you can become Krishna conscious. First become conscious." Krishna unconscious means we just do everything on automatic pilot. Just do it, get it over with, on to the next thing. That keeps us in the same place. But when we become Krishna conscious, first we become conscious that what I'm doing is I've been given the greatest treasure, the knowledge to come to my actual spiritual position. Prabhupada, by the way, called the bodily concept of life, he called it skin disease. I have skin disease. I judge everyone by their skin. You have male skin or female skin, brown skin or white skin, you know, Indian skin or Australian skin. It's called skin disease, or the bodily concept of life. But Prabhupada said skin disease. So first become conscious that this is the process that we're using to come to the spiritual understanding. And if we do it right, we get the result. And if we do it wrong, we don't get the result. Is that logical? Is that logical? Is it fair? Is it fair? Yeah. Why should someone do it wrong and get the same result as someone who's doing it right? Doesn't make sense. So, first become conscious of what we're doing. Am I doing it right? Am I doing it properly? So we're having a Japa Kirtan retreat this weekend. And we're going to analyze if we're doing it right or if we're doing it wrong. What we're doing wrong, how to correct what we're doing wrong, and how to make it right. We're going to look at how we make advancement and how do we know if we're making advancement. And I'm going to give you tips and advice how to do it right if you're doing it wrong. So we hope that as many people as possible will come out, because it will be for your benefit. Because you didn't join this movement to take birth again. How many people joined this movement to go back home, back to Godhead? So you didn't join this movement to take birth again. But if you do it wrong, you take birth again. What's the proof? The proof is you're sitting right here. Your last life. You didn't go back to Godhead. Here you are again, trying it one more time. So make this a successful life. Return back home, back to Godhead in this life, so that Prabhupada can fulfill his mission to Krishna, that he brought people back home, back to Godhead. That's why Prabhupada came. Don't make Prabhupada a failure. Make him a success by following his instructions. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any questions?
Someone was telling me that in space, when we send satellites, now if two satellites, the satellite behind docking, and the satellite going behind and catch other satellite, they have to pull brake instead of going faster.
This is called a flyby anomaly, that when the satellites go around the Earth, according to the mathematical formulas, they should be traveling at a particular speed, and it turns out that they're traveling either less or more. It doesn't follow the laws of mathematics that they figured it out. They don't know why. But it's called the flyby anomaly. These are the satellites that go around our Earth. Yeah, so they haven't figured it out. They figured out a few things. They haven't understood creation. So that's what my book's about. And I don't attack, well, I do attack some scientists, but basically I'm presenting it not as the spiritualists versus the scientists, but I'm presenting it as the modern creation story versus the traditional creation story. So then I'll say that the modern creation story, this doesn't make sense, this doesn't fit, this doesn't work. The modern creation story is having problems. Now, the traditional creation story doesn't have those problems, but it has the added feature of a supernatural creator, which science doesn't accept. But if you accept that, then everything else falls right into place perfectly. But if you don't accept it, then everything just appears to be just right. But how did it happen? Was it a fluke, a one in a million chance? Okay, maybe there's a one in a million chance that one thing was just right, but how is it that every single thing is just right? The odds of that are a zillion, trillion, billion, million to one that it could happen. So they've come up with a new strategy, you've heard of the Big Bang Theory. That's what they taught when you went to school. But the new theory, it's a little different. It's called the multiverse. Universe means uni equals one. One universe. But now there's a multiverse. There's unlimited universes. And every universe has their own set of laws. So it just so happens that in this particular universe, it had this set of laws that was just right for life. But all the other ones don't. In other words, it's like going into a gambling casino, and you have a million roulette wheels, and with a million roulette wheels, your number is bound to come up. Instead of having just one roulette wheel, you have a million of them. So your number is bound to come up. You understand? Is that science? That's not science. That's just speculation. There's no proof, there's no data, there's no observational data, there's nothing. It's just a theory. It's not even a theory. What I've discovered is that there are scientists who are criticizing the other scientists. So I use those scientists against these scientists in my book, so it doesn't look like it's me. And I present myself as just the man on the street. I'm just an average person with an education, with a little bit of common sense, and I'm trying to understand. So I don't say that I'm a Hare Krishna or I'm this, that, or the other thing. And the book is meant, for the average person, for the public. It's not to present Hare Krishna, it's just to present the truth. And the truth is that it's bogus. Just like, I don't know about Australia, but in most countries, children are taught at Christmas that Santa Claus comes and gives gifts. Right? You know this? Australia also? And then when kids become 9 or 10 years old, they find out there was no Santa Claus. It was all a hoax. But when you're 5 or 6, you think there's Santa Claus. How do you think that? Well, you go to the shop and there's Santa sitting there and you sit on his knee and you tell him what gifts you want. You can go online and the North Pole is there. You can send your letter to Santa Claus. They have Santa's tracking on the night of Christmas or Christmas Eve. They track Santa's journey through planet Earth like this, where he is, and kids can see this. In 2008, in Canada, Santa Claus was declared a Canadian citizen, and the North Pole exists in Canada, and here's the address. Any kid who writes to that address, it goes to Santa Claus in the North Pole, and people write back answers, so the kids think Santa Claus is answering. In America, the North Pole is in Alaska. In Finland, it's in Finland. In Norway, it's in Norway. In Sweden, it's in Sweden. In China, it's in Finland. And the Finnish government and the Chinese government cooperate. So if you send any letters to Santa Claus to Finland, you get a reply if you're living in China. Right? Now, how did I know that? Because I did the research. I got all the figures and all the details. So they present to the children a complete fantasy that no child can figure out that it's a hoax until they become a little older and they find out it's the parents who've been giving the gifts all along. Similarly, science has given us a whole hoax. The universe was created like this, it came into being like this, all the laws, this, that, and everything, and it's a complete hoax. Just like the Santa Claus hoax. So we have the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is not a hoax. This is the real thing. But it may be difficult for us to grasp some of the things that happen or they talk about in the Bhagavatam, because it's beyond what is conceivable for us. Therefore, when I was a young devotee, our group of devotees, we took shelter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, because Chaitanya Charitamrita is so accessible. Everything that we're doing here is what Lord Chaitanya and his associates were doing there. You can relate to it so easily. And then Lord Chaitanya explains various concepts of the Bhagavatam and how you apply it in your day-to-day bhakti yoga life. So the Chaitanya Charitamrita like opened up everything for us. So how many people are reading Chaitanya Charitamrita? See, one person only. It's the most important shastra. If you want to understand Gita and you want to understand Bhagavatam, you study Chaitanya Charitamrita, and all of a sudden everything opens up and you understand. Any other points for discussion? So Chaitanya Charitamrita is the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada is giving us the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya took the teachings of the Parampara and expanded it. He broke open the storehouse of love of God, Krishna Prema, and he distributed freely to everyone through the Mahamantra. And by chanting this Mahamantra, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam, then Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam, our devotion and our intelligence increases. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.